Hello everybody and welcome to the NRF1 podcast E289. We're back once again, as always, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your NRF1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK, and this is our NRF1 Christmas special slash end of the season special slash Christmas party. You probably tell by the lack of cheer and everything in the background that we're not in the pub again. Obviously with Christmas around the corner, COVID doing its thing, we don't want to risk anything too much and risk not seeing our families at Christmas, so we're at home, but we're still having a party. So grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and get ready for a full, I'm going to say a lot of time because I don't know how long this is going to go on for, this podcast, but get ready for a full session of Formula One chat. I'm here joined by an already pretty bumper crew. I haven't got all the intros written down actually, so I'm just going to wing it because that's what's best. I should say, of course, I am Rich Baxter, hosting once again today. Joining me tonight we have Steve Rust, he's just a prediction specialist. Steve, welcome back.
Yes, hello, thanks, welcome back. It's been a while, apologies for the absence. I'll try and make up for it in this session and next year or so.
All good. No, it's the end of the season, so all great stuff. Also joining us tonight, I'm going to introduce them both at the same time because they are the brothers, they're the Springle brothers no less. We have Dan and Callum. Guys,
hello, good evening,
welcome back.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, and I mean, Christmas party, right? I mean, it's quite a season to celebrate as well.
Yeah, it's been a long one as well, but yeah, not too controversial finish. So we definitely won't be talking about that.
Oh dear, and Callum here as well, and. Callum, where are you these days? Because are you still in Norwich? Have you moved away now as well, or?
Well, I moved out mid-pandemic, so left my parents' house and moved in with my partner, in not quite in North Norfolk. Well, politically in North Norfolk, but about an hour away from the coast, so a bit different from what it was before.
Fair enough, but still Norfolk nonetheless, so we'll take that. And I should just say, obviously there's us lot right now, we are expecting more people to drop in and out as we go. We kind of set this up as a bit of a drop-in session and everything, so hopefully it's going to work well, so we're expecting more as we go. But it's a Christmas special season review, so we also need to talk about Abu Dhabi before we get stuck into the full season. I'm just seeing that our own Perry Hamilton has joined us as well. Ped is here. How are you doing, Ped?
Hi, everyone. I'm good, thank you. How's everyone else?
It's all good. You're perfect timing. Right. Just as we kind of wrapped up the last intro, you joined, so it worked out well.
Yeah, there's no such thing as late when you're VIP.
Not just VIP, the founding member.
That's it. I'm like Hulk Hogan. I just turn up for the main events, and then just that's it.
Oh, I think it's called fashionably late, isn't it?
I don't think there's ever been anything fashionable about me, so I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh, good stuff. Well, we might as well get stuck into Abu Dhabi Road while we're here. What a finale. I'm exhausted just thinking about it because there was so much that went on here. Dan, I'm going to come to you first because you already alluded to it, and a not too controversial final. Now, I mean, the race was going so swimmingly well. It was nice and clean. Well, until lap one, we could argue anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could certainly argue that had the race not transpired as it did in the end, that lap one had more or less decided the Grand Prix. You certainly could have seen Hamilton breezing off into the distance, and Verstappen didn't really have much pace to respond to that. So, I think that lap one dive bomb, I think, kind of agree with not having to give the place back. For me, I think Mercedes did kind of take the piss, or Hamilton did take the piss in gaining an advantage from it. I didn't quite understand Michael Massey's decision to say that it was completely valid, that he's gained an advantage and that he gave all of the advantage back. So I think if you look at how far ahead he was for the next couple of laps, it was considerably more than side by side. So he certainly could have ended up with Hamilton completely breathing to the end, but as it was, that didn't happen.
Like we were saying, that the race kind of in the middle of it, it was all kind of under control, all as expected. Pit stops went all okay. The racing on track, you know, like you said, Hamilton, he was ahead, but the gap wasn't kind of growing too much for most of it. Just kind of going along as normal. Then we had drama right at the end. So we had, I think, both Alfa Romeos kind of towards the end, their cars broke. So they retired. I think we had George Russell who had a problem, they retired. And we're having all this the whole time. It was like, oh, could there be a safety car? Could there be another twist? And nothing really happened. And then and then Nicholas Latifi decided to put them all to shame and have a bit of a crash. And, I mean, it really kicks off from there. I mean, Steve, who would have had odds that Nicholas Latifi in a Williams with a Mercedes engine would be the one to kind of cause Mercedes all the headaches that it did?
I know. I mean, I have to admit, there's obviously so many different circumstances that the race could have ended, you know, with the decisions that Michael Massey could have taken, obviously eventually he'd taken. But had the race perhaps finished under the safety car, so for example, and obviously it would have been, championship would have been Hamilton's, do we think that Red Bull would have been protesting and sort of saying, oh, the Williams Mercedes connection, you know, it's got to be something in that, you know, it's funny that he crashed, whatever. That was just sort of something that slipped into my mind, you know, from all of the other controversies as to whether the decision was right and all this, that and the other. I just wondered whether somebody else picked up on that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a bit more of a conspiracy theory, that, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. But, you know, you've got to throw something out there. No, of course not. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual sort of incident, I mean, it was... it is what it is, it happened. I don't fully agree myself in the way that the decisions were taken as to how the race ended. I mean, we've had plenty of races in the past where they've ended under a safety car because there's not been enough time to follow all the kind of rule procedure and all that. It's just that this was a championship one that they decided to do it differently. I don't really agree with it. I don't think it was properly followed. But I kind of would also agree that kind of what happens on track and should remain that. I wouldn't really want to see a championship changed in a courtroom. So yeah, I mean, in a brief nutshell, for now at least, that's kind of my take on it.
Well, I think I seem to recall I put something in our text group about, like, if you're going to do anything about the way that it was called, in terms of if there's a breach of the rules, the breach of the rules wasn't laid at the feet of either Mercedes or Red Bull. If anything, the breach of the rules is at the feet of the person who is responsible for controlling those rules. Now, in that instance, what you then have is, what it calls into question is the validity of the Grand Prix result. So if the rules haven't been properly followed, then does the result of the Grand Prix actually count, or could you vacate it? Could you, you know, make it act as if it never happened? But if that's the case, if that's what they wanted to do, we'd still end up in exactly the same position that we're in now, which is Max would still be champion because they were level on points, he had more race wins, and Mercedes would still be constructors champions because they were ahead. So the only thing that would change would be that stuff that's lower down the order, which, let's be honest, most people aren't paying attention to. So the idea that actually, yeah, something's gone wrong here, let's appeal it, let's point out and go, these rules weren't properly followed if you're Mercedes and we've got our own QC at the race, good on them. I mean, they've probably got the money to pay the retainer, haven't they? So you go to a courtroom, you have the decision, someone goes, actually, do you know what? Yeah, you've got a really good point. Let's vacate the result of that race. Brilliant. Everything's still the same.
Hmm. That's the issue, isn't it? I think maybe Mercedes hope, assuming that they are going to go ahead before the deadline tomorrow with an appeal, is that perhaps the result could be changed to the order that they feel it probably should have finished in under a safety car. But yeah, that's quite a valid point, really, Ped. I mean, they might just turn around and in a court of law and say, yeah, we completely agree, but we'll completely scrap that race, and yeah, you'll end up with exactly the same result in terms of the championship. So exactly.
And if anything, I mean, if my role in working as a HR professional has taught me anything, is it if you go after the process, you've got a higher chance of succeeding. So it's not about whether or not person A did X or didn't do X. It's about the process that you followed to reasonably prove that this person did what they're saying they did. What you could do is you could potentially prove that the race director failed to uphold their duty to whatever that duty is, you know, however it's framed in either their contract, their job description, the charter, whatever it is that they sign, and you could successfully argue that they failed to uphold it. Fine. Are you going to successfully argue that they only failed to uphold it for the last 10 minutes of the race?
Probably not. That's the issue. Yeah.
You're either going to get, well, if they were unfit to discharge their duties, then they were unfit to discharge their duties for the entire event. Now then, and the reason that will never pass, so that's more likely to be the case than actually they were great up until that last 10 minutes when it just didn't go our way. That's not going to hold water. So the more likelihood is that you would get, well, actually they weren't fit for their duties throughout the entirety of the race. Now then, the natural expansion of that is, well, if they weren't fit during that race, maybe they weren't fit during every other race, so maybe we have to vacate the entire season. And you've just understood how ridiculous that whole thing sounds. So it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a very, very sticky situation. And I want to bring Callum in here because I know what Callum's like, and he's very, very knowledgeable on these things. Now, Michael Massey was obviously the race director, and obviously Mercedes, after the race, kind of protested and everything, with everything that had gone on with the safety car coming in, only a few lapped cars allowed to over themselves. Now, reading the rules, there's obviously some debate there. Now, Callum, I want to know, what were your take on the rules, and do you think Michael Massey was in the right or wrong in that situation?
Well, if you follow the sporting regulations regarding safety car restarts, and particularly with cars unlapping themselves, every car that was lapped should have been allowed to unlap themselves, which I think the only other two in that queue that were lapped were Stroll and Schumacher. So basically what they did was allow only the cars between Hamilton and Verstappen to get in front of the queue, and then about 5 seconds after they got ahead of the safety car, flagged that the safety car was going to end, which in the regulations you're supposed to wait until the lap after the last lapped car has passed the safety car to restart. So based on purely what the regulations say, every lapped car should have been let past, and then they should have restarted on lap 58, which of course wouldn't have been possible because you're not allowed to overtake until the start line, meaning that basically the race would have ended under a safety car.
So, Callum, can I just ask then, and by the way, hi Callum, it's really good to talk to you because it's been forever. Hope you're well, mate. But just on that, that's what the regulation says, that's great. But then is there some kind of catch-all clause somewhere, either in these regulations or in another set of regulations that references these regulations, that says that the race director has a level of autonomy to interpret these rules as they see fit in order to provide either a level of safe racing or what have you? Does that exist anywhere, do we know?
Yes, I don't know if it's I don't know what article it is exactly, But there is a rule that basically says that the race director is allowed, under the regulations, to do as he sees fit. So, I mean, in my head anyway, the sporting regulations are the spirit of the rules that should be followed, whereas things like a technical regulation are things that you will follow or you will face a penalty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I remember rightly, I think it's Article 48.12 is any car may unlap themselves. It doesn't specify all, it just says any. Then Article 48.13 effectively says don't listen to 48.12 if the race director says that he wants to do something different.
Right. So there are... I mean, it's like your job description, isn't it? Your job description says everything that you're supposed to do, and then there's that wonderful thing at the end that says, plus any other duties suitable for the full completion of your role. It's just kind of like, well, what does that mean? So this idea that it's just like, here's this thick tome of regulations that probably read like stereo instructions, Beetlejuice reference, I know you got it, and then suddenly we're just expected to go, but actually, it doesn't really matter, because as long as this one person says we're doing it this way, we're going to do it that way.
It's a very...
rules are written in absolute gibberish, because I read what Martin Brundle wrote in his column afterwards, and I'll see if I can get what exactly the regulations say.
Well, this is the problem with the regulations, because we talk about... After the race and everything, it came out, everyone was saying, one thing remains clear, we need to have really clear, precise rules and regulations so we don't kind of end up in this mess again, because it was controversial, you have everyone saying different things about it. We've kind of all accepted the result, but probably not the manner in which it came about. And that's the situation. Do you think as well, while you find these what was written, do you think there will be the opportunity before next season, which is only like 3 months away, do you think there'll be the opportunity for them to kind of tighten the regulations and make sure that it is clear? Because let's be honest, it isn't.
Well, there is time to do it over the off season, but you also have to consider the fact that all of the technical and sporting regulations, the international sporting code, are all written in what is essentially an English translation of French in legal language, isn't it? So, you know, to the lay person, it's never going to be written in such a way that it is easily comprehensible. It's going to need to be something that is a legally binding document, effectively, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
So, you know, there is going to be some scope to redefine some of the regulations, but especially considering that the FIA have basically gone, okay, well, if you've lodged a protest, and then we'll investigate ourselves, and then they basically come back and say, well, upon investigating ourselves, we basically found that everything we decided we wanted to do was correct, so therefore we're not going to take it any further.
Callum, have you found the quote?
Yes, and if you want a case in point that the rules should be simple and readable, then this is probably it. Because what the rules say is... I don't know what this applies to, but it says word for word, this will only apply to cars that were lapped at the time they crossed the line at the end of the lap during which they crossed the first safety car line for the second time after the safety car was deployed. Now, I can't make head nor tail of that.
So, it applies to the lap, the start line on the lap after... What?
If you're good with double negatives, I would imagine that it is manna from heaven for you. But for most people, that probably isn't.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
This is very typical of the FIA. Having actually read technical and sporting regulations for Formula E, it's no clearer. So, you know, this is about as clear as it gets from the FIA.
Don't be the resident expert. What are you playing at? Don't tell us that. I did actually see Ross Brawn came out and said that they're going to really clamp down on the level of communication that the team managers have with race control, from the level of pressure that, you know, Christian Horner and Toto were both trying to put Michael Massey under to get their own way, that he's come out and sort of said, you know, it's like when club managers try and influence the referee to make a decision one way or the other. And again, I know I said to you guys, I was just like, you know, at the moment they treat race control like a football referee and it should be treated like a rugby referee. And yeah. I sort of stand by that idea that actually, if we hadn't been able to hear any of those radio messages between Christian and Michael and Toto and Michael, would we be having these conversations? Would anyone know that there was any controversy? There'd probably be commentators going, oh, well, I've not seen this before. But really, because we're privy to how that conversation came about, we probably feel like we've almost got that burden of knowledge of, wait a minute, something doesn't seem right here. And I do agree that the level of influence that each was trying to exert and the fact that it was made so public, I think really needs to be addressed. And either it's, you know, race director says and that's it, you don't back chat, and if you back chat, actually that's as much as you could get a penalty, 5 second penalty. But again, that becomes quite arbitrary in how you apply it, and there needs to be some clear process around that. But I think that's as much part of it as the fact that the rules are unclear to a layperson. And again, Dan, sorry, I know you're not a layperson, you're actually relatively experienced and skilled, so I'll take that back. But to me, those rules are relatively unclear, but you can absolutely refine the way that people are allowed to communicate with race control and the influence they can try and exert.
Well, yeah. One idea I have seen bandied about is like the fourth official in football, who's effectively the manager's sort of shouting box, aren't they? They're basically there to take the torrent of abuse and hold up a board six times a match. So maybe one solution is to actually have a kind of fourth official in race control who is basically there to listen to this sort of radio channel and then pass on only the important messages. So basically, you know, just act like a bit of a filter. Other than, you know, the more draconian measures, like there will be no radio channel to the race director themselves. It will be, if there is a channel, it will only be a one-way system. And then therefore you are getting into the world of, well, the race director says, and so be it. But I guess it depends on exactly what sort of solution you want. But either way, I mean, completely agree that, you know, that is actually rather disgusting behaviour that we have got to the point where this is being broadcast internationally and we can hear, you know, the team principals lobbying. It's effectively the referee. Yeah. For their own sort of self-interest. There is nothing for the good of the sport in them lobbying the race director, because he's ultimately just trying to have a race that is ultimately safe, but is also holding up in sporting integrity, and that's a whole sort of slippery slope and a whole kettle of fish that we haven't even opened yet. So it depends on exactly what solution they want to apply in the end, doesn't it?
Well, this is the problem that we have, is obviously it was so controversial, the ending of the race, with the way that it came around. Obviously, because we had such mixed communication coming through, and we had in between that the radio messages to the race director, like you say. So first of all, we're told lapped cars can't overtake, so you're like, okay, we might get one or two racing laps here. Then that's happened, we're told lapped cars can overtake, but only five cars, which were the two in between Hamilton and Verstappen. Soon as they're past the safety car, we're told the safety car is ending. Now it's a very strange situation that, you know, we're told these cars aren't unlapping themselves, they're not allowed, then suddenly they are allowed. In between that, we've heard a message from a team boss complaining to Michael Massey. And it's not the first time we've heard it this season. It's not the first controversial decision that has been made this season by the race director. And I think the other thing that really stands out is with the race director, he's obviously got a lot of decisions to make. He has to remain in communication with the teams, as we saw in Saudi Arabia. If he needs to tell a team, your driver needs to let this guy past, if, you know, if the communication between both teams was lacking, between both teams and the race director was lacking then, and in that situation, we know that he needs to speak to the teams quickly. So if you take it out that the team can't speak to him, he needs to be able to speak to the team at least, because I mean, who knows what kind of, you know, how bad it could end up otherwise. If he's telling his mate, it's like, hey Jim, you got to tell Red Bull that they have to let this guy through, and then you have to tell this guy that you can go past. It's you just got a train of people in that case. That'll be, I can imagine that's going to end up in a bit of a nightmare. But one thing that I do want to ask in relation to Michael Massey, there's been a lot of people saying he needs to leave his job. Now, when I was watching Ted's notebook a couple of weeks back, and he said about Massey was allowed out of the stewards' room for a smoke break. Now, I'm not surprised he's a smoker, because he seems to be under a lot of stress from not just the team bosses, but all the public as well, because people have been in some ways calling for blood, which is quite horrible to you know, to see another human being treated like that. But I can understand why people are that mad about it. Now, I want to ask you a couple of questions here. First of all, we'll go through each of you. Do you think it's time for Michael Massey to leave? Ped, we'll start with you.
No, I really don't. I think he's got an incredibly hard job. And all I could think of that whole time was anybody, the old spoof comedy film Airplane? You know the one I'm talking about?
I know the one, yeah.
The guy is like the air traffic controller, and he's like, looks like I quit the wrong week to quit drinking, quit smoking, quit sniffing glue. And it's just like, can just imagine Michael Massey just escalating like his coping mechanisms, because it's a heck of a impressionable, it's a heck of a difficult job. Okay. And we've just found out, you know, how difficult it is to interpret the things, but also it's this idea of that clarity of communication. So yeah, you need some guidelines around that, because the idea, I think part of the concern was as well, these unlapped cars went through and then the safety car went out and nobody knew it was happening.
Yeah.
You know, Mike hadn't got onto the radio and gone, right, guys, team-wide broadcast, this is what we're doing. Every team gets that message and everybody knows, and that's what we're going to do. It just seemed very quickly processed and quickly actioned. So again, give him some guidelines around communications and clarify the division of labor, because they all get on the radio to Michael to say about what is and isn't happening. And you just know that it's Michael always turns around and goes, guys, that's the stewards. The stewards are looking at that. And Michael Massey isn't the stewards. And so I think just a clear understanding of allocation of responsibility and accountability, and this again is my HR hat on, but understanding that structure and understanding how it works and giving him, I mean, he's, honestly, could you imagine if this was any other any other role in any other business, and they'd just been so publicly destroyed and pushed one way or the other, and then that company turns around and goes, yeah, I know you've had a really shit time, and I know we've given you literally no support, but you're fired.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough.
So I think ultimately he could do with extra support there, and he could do with people helping him, so it's not just one figure, it's you know, two or three at least.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think anyone needs to lose their job at all, but I just think we really need some clarity, and I think we need to understand who does what and who's allowed to speak to whom and what they're allowed to say. And if we just get really clear on that, because it's not the first time that they've started it, you know, limiting radio comms, because they limit how much, you know, teams can communicate to drivers now, and they never used to, and they realized that there was an issue with it, and so now they go and change it. And I think they could do the same here.
Yeah, fair enough. Callum, what about you? Do you think Massey should be replaced, or do you think extra help? What are your thoughts?
I think when you replace one guy doing anything and you pull in somebody else to do the same job, you probably just end up with different problems rather than actually fixing the ones that you've already got. So whether or not it's a worthwhile investment to give him the boot and bring somebody else in, it's probably not in the long run. I think in any key role like that, compartmentalising is key. So it's, for me anyway, it's just a case of get someone in to support him and let him do ultimately what is his job, rather than constantly being on the phone to teams harassing him, just let him get on with it. But ultimately, the teams have got to take whatever decision they're given.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair points. And Dan, are you in agreement with these two? Do you think?
Yeah, I am in agreement. I really don't think that we need to be sacking people left, right, and centre. Because, well, first of all, this isn't football. But secondly, you know, anyone who's recently changed job will know full well that it takes time to get up to speed in your new role. And if we end up having Michael Massey gone, there will be a new race director, but that will take them time to get fully up to speed, and then therefore, you, like Callum says, you just end up creating different problems. But you know, likewise, he's gone through his training regime effectively under Charlie Whiting, so he's Charlie Whiting's legacy, if you will. And I mean, even referencing Charlie, he had Herbie Blash, I believe, as the deputy race director. I don't know if there is a deputy to Michael Massey, but yeah, I completely agree with Ped that, you know, there do need to be more heads in race direction responsible for directing the race, as opposed to you know, being as part of the TV crew or whatever exactly they do in race control. I'm not 100% sure on that, but yeah, I don't think he needs to go. It's just people calling for blood, as you say, and what with the world as it is at the moment and social media being so readily accessible, and you don't need to have your ID approved or anything like this, that, you know, people are just going to spout whatever they like until the cows come home. I mean,
the greatest trick social media ever pulled is convincing you that just because your voice can be heard, it should be heard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's precisely that. I mean, even if you look at what people have been hurling at Latifi this week, is just beyond reprieve. So, yeah.
It's, and Steve, what about you? Are you in the same camp with these guys?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't really sort of necessarily believe that just getting rid of someone and replacing them with somebody else necessarily will fix the issues. I mean, the main thing is there are issues there. It's not just this race. We've had inconsistent or controversial decisions made. You know, it's been going on for a while. This is his third season, I believe, in charge as race director. Probably until this season, we haven't really had such close championship and battles, and, you know, two drivers really going at it and pushing the limits of the rules to the point that they've had this to deal with, you know, in short spaces of times in races and consistently week on, week in. So I think there's issues there that they've got to fix, and I think he should be given more support, more time, or whatever he needs, or, you know, to get to the bottom of it and come up with a solution in whatever that might be. But I don't really think that just getting rid of him and replacing him with somebody else, you know, is necessarily the right answer. I mean, he has had a difficult season, but it's not, I wouldn't say solely down to sort of himself. Yeah, it hasn't really helped. I think it was the other race where Christian Horner came out afterwards and said, oh, it's races like this where we really miss Charlie Whiting. And I thought, great, what a really helpful comment to be saying. he has made mistakes. But it's just not the answer. Just getting someone else in, you know, like Callum said, you could fix some issues and create others. You know, I think you just got to work with what you got and work together and fix the issues and come up with a better solution so that we don't have these issues going forward and we're not turning fans away because of it. You know, we're actually still bringing in fans because it's exciting and close racing.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And the only other thing I was going to say on the subject, the second question, you've kind of already answered, but I was going to say, if you did think he needed replacing, who would you get in? Because Marcin Brundle obviously said in the interviews after the race, you know, there's no one to step into the role. So I'm going to kind of change the question a bit. But who do you think could help out Michael Massey? Is there any names you would shout and say put them in a position as a deputy race director to help him through?
Well, ultimately, at the end of the day, the FIA effectively have a pool of race directors to choose from. For example, Scott Elkins is another race director trained by the FIA who's responsible for Formula E, but I think he also has a couple of other FIA events under his belt as well. So, you know, could potentially rope him in, especially considering that there has been some crossover between F1 and FE staff. For example, when Alan van der Merwe couldn't go to the Turkish Grand Prix, I think it was because he didn't have his vaccine, they brought in the Formula E safety car driver to do the F1 safety car duties that weekend. So, you know, there is some crossover, and the FIA does have a pool of staff to choose from. That would probably be my first suggestion, but not sure if there are any other household names.
Well, I heard someone say that Ross Brawn is due to leave his position at the end of this year, I think it was. And I thought, he's someone who's been around Formula One for a long time, has been with many teams. He kind of knows the sport inside out, knows what people are like. He could be a figure that I think, you know, you wouldn't have Toto and Christian kind of shouting down their headset at him. I think they'd have too much respect for Ross Brawn. So, I mean, I could see him in a role helping out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely someone that commands respect, doesn't he? So I think he probably would be a half-decent choice. Whether he's suited to the role of assistant or deputy or whatever title you want to apply to a second-hand race director, then is debatable. Obviously, there will need to be some degree of training, no matter how experienced you are within the sport. He's still, at the very heart, a technical person,
yeah.
As opposed to sort of more of a gatekeeper, for want of a better word. So I think it does depend on the technicalities of these, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. And just to kind of wrap up Abu Dhabi, there's a few quotes I got from some of a few various people. So we heard on kind of after the race in interviews, some of the drivers, Lando Norris was kind of very confused about the situation. They were being told they could overtake, then they couldn't. Very confused. We had George Russell. He was on Twitter, and he said it. I think he said in interviews as well afterwards. Basically said, "This is unacceptable." In capital letters on Twitter, so you know he's serious. We had Carlos Sainz, obviously still in the race at that point, finished third. He even said on the team radio before they restarted that the race shouldn't restart. I think he could have been thinking of issues for himself, having other drivers behind him. And I think, you know, Danny Ric, he also kind of was confused about the situation. So there were several drivers who were confused. With it being such a big finale for the season, there was so many people watching who you don't usually see talking about Formula One. Probably also because it was on free TV, because Channel 4 obviously had a deal with Sky F1, which was great to see, by the way. But Gary Lineker, obviously football pundit, he kind of compared it to football, and it made me chuckle the way he said it, but he said, imagine Man City and Liverpool going toe-to-toe for the title. On the last day of the season, they meet and City are 3-0 up with just minutes to go. The referee decides it would be more exciting to have a penalty shootout. What's more, the City players have to be barefooted. That's F1. Now, it made me laugh the way he said it. Could be argued as a bit extreme. And then something was shared on the pod group during the week, which was a mock-up of a Formula One breaking news section, and it said Michael Massey being replaced by a Dice in 2022 for more consistent rules. So
I take real umbrage with that, because he's either being replaced by a die or by a set of dice. So, you know, get your singular and plural correct here, people, if you're going to make these kind of jokes. Come on.
Great stuff.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Great stuff. Well, I think that wraps up everything kind of from Abu Dhabi. Controversial, exciting nonetheless. And I mean, hey, we've been talking about it for 40 minutes. But that was only one race of, what was it, 22 race season? So we need to go on a bit of a rewind here. Ped, go on, give us your best rewind sound effect. Perfect, love it. Right. Going back in time here. To through the season. I think, shall we do what we normally do? And obviously we kind of wrap the season up and talk about lots of things and do some awards because... I mean, Dan, you came back earlier and you reminded me that earlier this season we actually did kind of predictions for what we thought the end of the year awards would be. So, shall we go through them?
Yeah, seems like a good idea, yeah.
Sounds good to me. All right. Well, we'll start with Driver of the Year. Now... I think there was me, Dan, and Ped who were on the podcast earlier this year where we were kind of taking guesses and everything, or predictions, I should say, for who we thought would be the driver of the year. Now, Ped, you apparently said Lando was your prediction. Dan said Gasly, and I said Leclerc. So
we've all done pretty good work there, haven't we?
We've not done too bad.
Yeah.
Obviously we like to be outside the actual box with these because anyone can say Verstappen or Hamilton. So we've gone for other people kind of on from there. Steve, we'll start with you because you didn't do it last time. Who would you say is your driver of the year and why?
Oh God, I was kind of hoping you wouldn't ask me first.
All right then, we'll give you some more time. We'll go to Callum because he wasn't there last time, so we'll give you some more thinking time.
I think probably until McLaren's slump, I probably would have also gone with Lando Norris. Thinking about afterwards, or just the season in general, possibly Leclerc. Considering that he put it on pole twice, probably should have won a race, all things being told. And he had a fair bit of bad luck as well. Without that, probably without even half of it, he would have been fifth in the standings. So I think on balance, I probably would go for Leclerc.
Fair enough. Good shout. And you know what, we just started doing the awards and I have to we're gonna pause at the first award because we've just been joined by I don't know how else we can do the introduction, jeez, rap god, but the founder, the man who brought us all here in the first place, the guy who actually started the podcast along with Ped, we should mention, but Michael Bailey, the one and only, has joined us.
hello everyone, good evening to you all. Long time
no
listen.
I've not heard.
who's on at the moment?
So we have Steve, we've got Dan, we've got Callum, we've got Ped, and possibly Alex. He's muted still. He's having some tech issues, but
oh, we've all been there. How lovely! Hello, everyone. Hello, listeners.
Hello.
Hello. We really do miss you.
Oh, I miss doing it. It's been and also I've missed F1. In truth, I would have been a rubbish host, to be honest, had I because I simply haven't been able to find the time to watch it as much as I used to and as I liked, with two little bubbers and a very busy job at the moment. But I managed to cram in some towards the end of the season, which was nice. And I have to say, a sterling job to all of you guys, and especially Rich for keeping the delightful NRF1 podcast going. And you know, I'm sure at some point I'll be back more frequently than this. But it's lovely to be here now. What have I missed?
well, so far, just probably about a good 40 minutes of talk about Abu Dhabi, the controversial ending, Michael Massey, should he stay or should he go?
Oof.
All the
great stuff.
Stuff.
I mean, I'll have to listen back to hear what you guys all said because I'm really interested in what that would have been. But I mean, do you want to ask me my view or
go on,
how best to do it?
We just started the awards. We've gone to the first award and we've had one answer so far. So you know what? We're going to rewind again. Paired rewind sound.
Oh, he's good at that.
He is good at that. So we'll rewind and we'll go back to Michael Massey. We basically asked the question: do you think he should go? Should he leave his position or should he stay? What would you say, Michael?
No, I would say that you're better off having someone who is hopefully going to learn from the experience of this year and build on it. I think there needs to be some sorting out of what the rules are in situations where it's probably a subjective view. So I appreciate you guys and all the listeners have already been through all this. I want to be really quick and concise because I know you don't want to really go over it all again, I'm sure. I think all I would say is that I kind of entirely expected Massey to make the mistake to make the decisions he did at the end, because there was no way they were going to let such a key moment and one of the most keenly anticipated moments in probably Formula One history end under a safety car. So you could kind of see that they were going to try and unravel it like that. Then the more you think about it retrospectively, the more you realize that that is actually really out of order, because as in the words of Lewis, I thought they clearly manipulated it so they would get some sort of finish. The problem was some sort of finish ultimately in the heat of the battle meant that, you know, Max was going to win. I mean, I've seen people later suggest that it could have been red flagged and then given a proper 5-lap shootout, which sounds brilliant, but I'm guessing no one thought of it at the time, or maybe there are some reasons why they couldn't have done that. I just really felt for Lewis, because the more I thought about it, I think Mercedes were screwed, really. They couldn't pit under the virtual safety car, and they were right not to, because that the way Max was going kind of made it the right decision. And then I think the timing of Latifi's accident meant that they couldn't pit under the second safety car either, so they were just a bit screwed. And I mean, sometimes no matter what you do, you can't even blame it on Perez holding him up, because ultimately that had nothing to do with it either. So what do you do? It's literally just sometimes when the margins are so fine, that's what sport makes, you know, as a result of it all. So yeah, but what an, I mean, phenomenally amazing, just so incredible to watch. Definitely, you know, an amazing end to a season, you're frustrated or not.
It was a fantastic season overall, and I think getting to the last race of the season, having a finale where they even agree, like Sky F1 agreed to put it on free-to-air TV. Obviously, it's going to be their own benefit as well, but that was great to see, and just the amount of people talking about it. I had two separate friends who messaged me who never normally watch Formula One, and they both messaged me during the race to say how great it was, and just like what a race, until the final 5 laps where they said this is just a bit of a farce.
But I don't know about you guys, but I've never known so many people to be talking about Formula One, certainly since it stopped being on free-to-air TV, which obviously in the end it was at the end of the season. But I've never known it. Everyone's been talking about it. Even my editor was at The Athletic was saying, oh, you know, we need to do some Formula One, because, you know, it's look at what this is. And you know, we're obviously trying to work out whether that's something to do in future. So, you know, I think it just captured so many people's imaginations. And, you know, I have to be honest, I know Ped's a big purveyor of this, but although it was a farce and everyone's kind of like, well, that's no way to run a sport, I still think they've probably done all right out of it. I have to be honest. I think the fact that so many people have been talking about it, ultimately, people will be really intrigued when next season starts, and that's all that anyone would have wanted. People are going to watch Drive to Survive because it fits into the narrative. They're going to want to see how it plays out. So I think Formula One's probably done all right out of it, and maybe that's another reason to keep Massey on board, because, you know, we all know who he is now properly, don't we?
And speaking of this, actually, the finale, it reminded me of something a while ago. Now I need to bring Callum in here, because Callum will know the exact year, I'm sure. Do you remember when what year it was when Senna and Prost had the coming together at the chicane at Suzuka, and then obviously Senna carried on, went on to win and like the world championship. Prost went to the stewards, and then they were just in there after the race, and it went on, and then they disqualified Senna and Prost won the title. What year was that?
Not that I'm old enough to remember it, but that was 1989.
It was 89. Okay, so it's not the first time we've seen Formula One be political. The stewards, race directors, everyone's got involved. So yeah, not the first time we've seen it.
Very par for the course for Jean-Marie Balest, to be fair, because then the year after at Suzuka again for the title decider, I think Senna was on pole and Prost was second, and then they switched overnight which side of the grid pole position was on.
Oh yeah.
To go against Senna, which led to Senna then, well, playing the victim or not playing the victim to then take out Prost. And then there was the whole Fisa Foca war in 1982, which I think Balest was part of Foca, possibly. I don't know. I can't remember exactly which side he was on or what was his involvement, but he ended up becoming FIA president out of it, and the rest, I suppose, is, as they say, is history.
Well, you know what? You know, if it can be political then, and people still refer to it as kind of the best era of F1 racing, then who knows what next year is going to bring? But let's move back forwards. I won't get Ped to do us a fast forward sound because it'll probably be like the rewind one.
It's going to sound exactly the same, Rich.
Oh, no, please, I want to hear it. Go on, Ped.
Well, no, Rich, just crop it and replay it like we always like we do with DT's pit stop sound. Just just use that whenever you want.
I like that. So we'll fast forward. I can't bother to edit in.
Brilliant. Oh wow, this podcast has changed.
But yeah, we'll fast forward, go back to the awards that we were going through. So the driver of the year, and we'll go through them. It's a good time to say as well, we've just been joined by Adam Noon in the call, podcast debut as well. So Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Oh no, it's great. It's good to have you on. You've been in the WhatsApp group a while, and this is like probably the first one you've actually managed to make it to. So it's good to have you, and obviously always good to see so many like opinions and thoughts flying around the group. So so welcome, and you know what, we're going to come to you first of all. We're going to put you straight on the spot.
Sorry
if that's harsh, but I have to. Let's go for it. Driver of the year. That's the award we were discussing. Callum, I think, threw in Lando and Leclerc. Earlier on in the season, myself, Ped, and Dan predicted Leclerc, Gasly, and Lando. So there's a few drivers there kind of already mentioned. Who would you say, Adam, is your driver of the year for this season?
Driver of the year for this season? Yeah, I mean, Lando, strong case for Lando. Love what he's done this year. Love how he's pushed on, kicked on. I always think his defending position is very underrated. I don't think it gets talked about enough, really, as part of his quality as a driver. But as he's already been said, I think I might have to go with the smooth operator himself, Carlos. Going into Ferrari like that, beating Leclerc, you know, I think more often than not. And I think he even got him in the championship on the final race as well, finishing fifth in the championship. In that Ferrari, which wasn't a particularly quick race car, I didn't think it had its moments, but they didn't win a race this season. So yeah, I think just going in to that team like that and just did a really, really good job.
Yeah, that's a good shout. And you know what, I was going to give a mention to him myself, because you're quite right, in the Drivers' Championship he finished fifth. He finished above Lando, which I think he was very, very happy about. Obviously above his teammate as well. And Ferrari, they had a pretty decent year this year, so they could be back. I'm gonna go to you next, Ped. I wanna know, who is your driver of the year?
I really liked how Lando drove. I thought he did a fantastic job, but I think I'm going to flip over to Gasly, because I just think he was always where he needed to be. He was always a little bit above where maybe we thought he'd be. I just think he had an absolutely cracking season and a good bounce back season for him as well, because he's, you know, his journey is very impressive in the way that he came in quite lauded, ended up getting that Red Bull seat, ended up getting kicked out of that Red Bull seat, going back down to AlphaTauri. We've seen that absolutely destroy other drivers, and he took it in his stride, and I think he did really well. And he just seems quite a likable chap. And he was a very grounding force at that team, especially since Yuki was quite up and down. I'm feeling Pierre on that one.
Nice. I like it. Mike, we'll come to you next, because why not? Who would you say is your driver of the year?
Well, yeah, I appreciate the gaps in my knowledge here. But certainly I think Lando seemed to build on what he'd done by all accounts. So he'd probably be my shout. I mean, you could go for the sentimental of Kimi, because, you know, he's gone now. George Russell did well enough to earn himself the Mercedes seat. I think that's some noteworthy stuff there. Nikita Mazepin for maybe being the most memorable driver of all time, in that he just clearly wasn't capable. And yeah, we obviously can't give it to one of the top two, can we? So, Lando probably get my vote, I reckon.
Fair enough. Good shout. We heard from Callum, so I'm gonna go to Steve. We gave you some thinking time. Hopefully that's long enough.
No, I kind of pretty much made up my mind actually after the after you went from me to somebody else first on. I would be quite happy to say Lando as well, but to be honest, I'd like to hand it to Russell. I've just been really impressed with how much he's just grown and improved as a driver, especially this year. His Saturday performance has been obviously the second to none, really, in terms of qualifying. I think just what he's done with that Williams car, which is sort of midfield at best. I just think it's a worthy shout, really.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's worth like remembering as well that George Russell had a podium this season. Obviously, you could argue a bit more controversial than the final race. Probably not actually more controversial than that. I don't think anything could be. But obviously, at Belgium, where it was like a two-lap race or whatever we had. And it's not even that. It was two laps behind the safety car. He got himself a podium, so good to see for him.
Yeah, definitely. I must admit, I'd actually forgotten about that one. It's been such a long season, I can't quite remember all of them. But of course, and I think just sort of echoing more or less what Michael said, really, I think he's thoroughly deserved the Mercedes seat, and obviously we all look forward to that one next year, I'm sure. But I outside of the top two and not to echo everyone else's kind of vote with Lando Norris, I'll happily go for George Russell.
Yeah, fair enough. And Dan, we'll bring you in. Would you stick with your prediction from earlier this year of Gasly, or would you change it now?
No, I think I'd stick with Gasly, to be honest with you. I mean, more or less for all the same reasons Ped listed. So short one for me.
Fair enough. Well, you know what? While we've got you, you can lead us straight into Team of the Year. So you predicted McLaren, I predicted McLaren, and Ped predicted AlphaTauri. Who would you say for Team of the Year?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I mean, if you exclude Red Bull and Mercedes for being too obvious, then you are more or less left with, Williams. Because obviously this is all sort of relative, isn't it? I think it's definitely not going to be Alpine. I think they've massively under-delivered, and likewise Aston Martin. So that's already two scratched off. I don't think I'd stick with McLaren, to be quite honest with you.
Didn't Alpine win a race this year?
Yeah.
Yes, but I think they're still under-delivered. Considering when Renault first entered, or when they bought the team in 2016, I think it was, they wanted to have won races probably by 2019, if I remember rightly. And considering they've got Fernando in the car, they should really be doing more than they are at the moment. But, you know, this it's, I think Enstone is still recovering from those Lotus years where they had virtually bugger all budget. So, yeah, I think they're still under-delivering, really. Maybe next year is a good chance for a reset for them. But, yeah, just going back to McLaren, I think, yeah, they didn't end the season quite as strongly as they had hoped. Obviously, they had the that lovely, great result in Monza, but for whatever reason, they just tailed away. So, yeah, not for me. Maybe Ferrari. But, yeah, I think ultimately for me, it's going to have to be Williams.
Yeah. And not any loyalty from a previous employer, by any chance?
No, there is there's no loyalty there. You're looking at the side eye here.
I like it. And I don't know if Alex, if you're still there, if you're still having tech issues, or have you're okay now?
I am, but I still definitely have tech issues, so
no worries.
Any better at all?
No, it's still very quiet for me.
Well, if you can hear me, I would personally say Ferrari and Williams as the best teams.
Yep, like it. You know what, I'll edit it and I'll edit you louder, so.
Yes, go on. Different voice as well, if you can.
That's effort.
I mean, I kind of agree with everyone's opinion. I like the Russell shout. I think George did amazing with the tool he had at his disposal. And likewise, Ferrari, I think they, as a team, they came up nicely this year. Some good results. Definitely something they could have done better, but I think they stood out for me.
Nice, good stuff. Right, I'm gonna take it back to you, Adam. And team of the year, I want to know your thoughts. And you know what, while we got you here, I want you to tell us who is your all time favourite team in Formula One before you give us your team of the year as well.
Okay, yeah, no worries. So my all-time favourite team is McLaren.
Nice.
Yes, grew up, first of all, rooting for Senna, and then when they were the Silver Arrows with Hakkinen and Coulthard and the rest of them, and then obviously going on to with Lewis and good old Jensen. And Fernando, so yeah, McLaren all the way for me.
I like it. Would you put them as your team of the year as well then?
Yeah, I think I would actually, just because they did tail off, and they tailed off sort of quite sharply as well, and I think it was quite clear that car, one, was very difficult to drive. And I think they probably would have clinched third quite comfortably if Danny Ric had been able to get his feet under himself a bit quicker. And I know he delivered the win and stuff like that, but I think overall throughout the season, obviously he wasn't as strong as I'm sure he would want to be. But having said that, looking at where they were a few years ago compared to where they are now, the rebuild job that they've done is just incredible. And to keep that going, especially when, you know, it's effectively a two-horse race up at the front, to keep going, keep pushing, and to be able to challenge Red Bull and Mercedes at certain tracks, I think is testament to what a good season they've had. And I mean, if they'd done, you know, a bit better weather watching in Russia, they would have had two wins this season, which is a, you know, a long, long way forward from where they were like three seasons ago.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the big thing that stands out here, I was reading a few stats, whilst Mercedes and Red Bull were top of the standings in the constructors, McLaren ended fourth behind Ferrari I think 47 and a half, if I can do maths, 47 and a half points behind Ferrari they ended up. However, McLaren were the only team this season who had a 1-2 finish, which it's shocking, but also do you think they could be back, McLaren?
That tells you everything you need to know about Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yep.
I mean, Ped, what about you? What did we say? Who was your prediction? AlphaTauri. Would you stick with them?
Yeah. I suppose I have to if I ended up giving Pierre Gasly driver of the year, my driver of the year, didn't I? AlphaTauri did really well, and they were enjoyable to watch. They've always been a very quick car in a straight line, that kind of speed, and it just looked sick with those white wheels, man. And I know DT appreciated that part of it as well. So, but yeah, I just it's a nice clean livery, it's a nice clean looking car. They just seem like a decent team to root for. And I probably echo Adam's point around McLaren. Strong looking team, and get the win under the belt again, and what have you. Very young, promising team of drivers, and just did some really, really good stuff.
Speaking of good looking cars as well, I've got to get your thoughts on this because we like to talk about it. But they had another special livery this weekend, McLaren. The whatever the company were, there was just lots of colours and lines on the car. What do you make of that one?
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it didn't blow my mind. I think my favourite thing from this weekend in terms of livery was the line about "We'll leave you alone, Kimmy," or whatever it was that was on the Alfa Romeo. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was good, and I liked Kimmy, rocking his throwback helmet, and then someone else was rocking a Kimmy tribute helmet. And I mean, it's clear that he means a lot to the paddock and he means a lot to the field, and I'd preferred that. But yeah, I mean, the extra squiggly line, and I mean, like Ferrari sticking a bit of green on didn't look particularly right for me. I don't think there's any colour other than red, white and black that should go on maybe a bit of yellow, all right, that should go on a Ferrari. But not overly thrilled by it, I will say.
Fair enough. Who haven't we been to for Team of the Year? Callum, I don't think you've told us, and Mike, have you?
No. But I mean, I probably haven't seen enough to judge because I'd end up going on the top two, I think. So I'll default. I mean, who out of Mercedes and Red Bull had the better season?
Oh, well, that's where it's difficult, because in terms of points, Mercedes. In terms of wins, Red Bull.
Which is Valtteri's fault again, isn't it?
Sorry, Callum, say that again.
I think in terms of both the challenge that both of them have had, particularly Mercedes, where Mercedes' starting point was, for example, in pre-season testing, I think you probably have to give it to them, especially considering that after Silverstone, they abandoned pretty much any updates to the car and were just going essentially fine-tuning on the setup, trying to find the nth degree in any possibly could without the kind of updates that Red Bull were bringing pretty much every race. I think I saw something on Tech Talk that was Mercedes' last round of updates was to use their tokens in Abu Dhabi, and that was it, basically, since Silverstone. So considering the trajectory that they went on to be quicker than Red Bull for all of the last five races is probably something that should be commended more than it is.
Yeah, that's a fair point, actually, because they did have... I mean, the season could have been over long ago, but they kind of made a fight of it, didn't they?
Yeah, is all you can really expect, and it's a record breaker in that they've won 8 constructors' titles in a row now, which is probably academic, but it's also aligning sort of the point really of what a feat that they've made this year.
No, it's been good, a good season for them, you have to say. Cool, well, there's some good shouts in there. I like that. So I think we'll go on to probably, I'm going to say, my favourite award of the year, which is the Maldonado, Pastor Maldonado of the year. That well-loved guy, Ped, don't you just miss him?
With every shot.
Well, go on, take us straight into it. Who would you say is your Maldonado of the year? The guy who just messed up.
I mean, is it even fair to be able to pick Nikita Mazepin? Are we even allowing that? That feels a bit like, you know, putting God mode on Doom or something.
It's such a gimme, isn't it?
It is such a gimme.
I mean, it was embarrassing, actually.
Yeah.
Honestly.
No, absolutely. You know, the guy is, what was it? He's a professional driver. Like, it shouldn't be making those errors. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he is the obvious one, isn't he? But outside of that, I don't know if there was, I'm probably going to say Lando, just for the whole attitude around the rain and it costing the win. And maybe that can be shared between him and his team, because they really should have communicated better on it. But I'm going to say that.
That's interesting, because your prediction early this season was, I have to say it properly now because Michael's here, but it was Ricciardo.
I hope you've been doing that all season, Rich.
Honestly, I haven't.
Disgraceful.
At least he's honest about it.
Disgraceful. Yeah, that's a fair point. That is a fair point.
Because let's be honest, Mike's not going back and listening to every episode.
I am now.
If you've got time to do that, Michael, you've got time to be on the podcast.
That's very true. That's very true. Just let me bluff. Let me blag.
But you know what it's like when you leave a substitute teacher in charge. Mayhem's going to commence. So.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Finest substitute teacher we could ever ask for, Rich. And also, if he doesn't turn up within 15 minutes, we all get to go home. So that's the substitute teacher rule.
I mean, let's be fair, 90% of the season we've been at home anyway, so...
True. I'm intrigued here, Rich. What was my prediction around Ricciardo?
You said he would be the Maldonado of the year. I don't know the reasonings why, because Dan listened back for me, because I've completely forgot about it. Dan, do you remember any of the reasons Ped gave why?
It's completely escaped me, although you did pronounce Ricciardo in exactly the same way as you did in the mid-season review just now. So at least you're consistent, put it that way.
Oh, Mr. Consistency through and through me. Don't you worry. I think part of that might well have been just because of how Formula One have set him up to fail, because he was the face of the first season of Drive to Survive, and they've just really pushed him as this super likable, super engaging, super marketable person who is talented, and he just hasn't shown it. And I just had this thing that he was going to struggle, and he just was going to have let this opportunity slip him by. Well, I don't know whether I fully agree with that or not, but I suppose. I don't think the Maldonado of the year was Daniel Ricciardo.
Fair enough. Sorry, we're all allowed to change our minds halfway through, so it's all good. But I'm going to open it up to everyone. Has anyone else got any other shouts for Maldonado of the season? It's worth saying as well, by the way, that myself and Dan both said Bottas.
So, yeah, and that was for the Hungarian Grand Prix first corner smash, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that actually.
he managed to take out pretty much my entire F1 fantasy team in one corner in that race.
that's good going.
Is Mazepan driving? Has he got his seat for next year?
He has. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's great, isn't it? That's remarkable.
Yeah, but it's okay because Daddy's paying. So.
Wouldn't it be funny if there was some like massive twist that actually turned out that his dad was the guy who owns Rich Energy or something, and it's just massive circle in the background that it's all secret.
Oh, that would be so very Haas, wouldn't it?
But yeah, Maldonado of the year. Shouts? Any other shouts?
I mean, outside of, it has to be outside of Mazepin. I've been disappointed with Yuki this season. But I wonder if he's just one of these kind of drivers that you see every so often who is blisteringly quick, but maybe lets it get away from him occasionally. He's almost too quick for his own good at the moment, if you see what I mean. Yeah, he just made some mistakes that I thought, mate, you shouldn't be doing that, and maybe not living up to potential, because when he's on it, he's a little rocket ship, isn't he?
I mean, he was fourth in Abu Dhabi, so
yeah, exactly.
He's got the pace.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a decent car as well, and I mean, he only finished, what, 14th in the standings or something like that?
Mm.
So, you know, he was the bottom of the midfield teams, and I feel like with his talent and with that car, he should have probably got finished higher up than that.
Yeah, that's a fair shout, and I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we had Yuki here right now. I wouldn't be surprised if he would agree, because he was, when he was given his new contract earlier in the season, he said that he was surprised because he keeps crashing the car. So
yeah, I mean, keeping it on the black stuff is pretty much Formula 1 101, isn't it? So, you know.
Of course. Yeah, any other shouts? Maldonado of the year?
I mean, going away from a driver basis, if we go to more teams, then I would throw Aston Martin into the mix there. Considering the highs they had of last season and all of the promise that showed. Yeah, they've really taken a step back this year, haven't they?
Yeah, 100%. It's been tough season.
It was the regs, man. It was the regs. That low rake just did it for him.
I completely forgot about that as well. Of course, that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, any other shouts to go along with that?
Yeah, I've got one. What about Michael Messi?
you know what? Someone had to say it, and I'm not surprised. whilst we said, you know, he shouldn't go and everything, he made it very, very messy. I think we're gonna have to just call him Michael Messi now, because it was, whilst he's justified it to himself, there was no kind of justification for things to anyone else. It was just, I think, as we already covered, mixed communication. It was very messy. And it wasn't the first, obviously Abu Dhabi wasn't the first time this season, so.
Well, we also have to appreciate the sound bites that he's given us this year. Like, for example, no, Toto, I haven't seen your email because I don't check my emails during the race. Or, Toto, it's called a motor race. We went motor racing.
Oh, jeez. They've all been to Toto as well. So, yeah, it's a bit funny. Although, what was it? It's just like, yep, thank you, Christian. And it just, I'll speak with the stewards. There's been some good ones. Well, I think the final award we have here is the moment of the year. Now, going back again to our predictions earlier this season, I didn't say anything. Dan said the cops crash at Silverstone. And Ped said three things. So, Ped, you can have first choice because you've got more than three things to choose from now.
I said three things.
Yeah, apparently.
I've got three things written down.
Hang on, I'll get it up. So you said horrific. Lando on the front row in Austria or Styria. I can't remember which one it was. I'm sure Callum remember. Right. The Hungarian Grand Prix restart with Hamilton being the only one on the starting grid whilst everyone was in the pit lane. And then in the same Grand Prix, the double points finish for Williams.
Yeah, no, I think I go Hamilton on the pit straight with everyone else on the in the pit lane. I think that was, I don't know, you could spend the rest of your life watching Formula One and probably never see that again.
that was the weirdest situation, wasn't it?
It was such a moment. It was surreal to the point of sitting there and being like, "What the?" And get ready with the bleep button, Rich. But what the f fuck am I seeing? That is what I just was thinking the whole time.
You can hear my loud keyboard. I'm writing it down.
Yeah. but yeah, that's that. I think is yeah. I'd say that would be my moment. Yeah.
No, good job.
I think for me, it's going to have to be. Well, I mean, the cops crash definitely up there still, as I said in the mid-season review. But I think for me, as like a more global thing, I'd have to go with Max Verstappen's failed overtake on in Bahrain, actually, because just what a sense of foreboding that we had. And what ultimately the season culminated in, how little did we realise then what we were going to get? I think for me, probably has to be a moment of the year just for how poetic it was.
There was a lot of overtaking this season, it seemed like. I don't know if it was just me, but there was obviously some pretty boring races along the way. But then we had some like absolute crackers, and a lot of overtaking. Does anyone know who actually won the overtaking award in the end? Was it Vettel or Alonso? Because they were the two fighting for it, weren't they?
Yeah, it was Vettel in the end, but he didn't get his a million jelly beans.
Disappointing.
Which would probably only make sense if you watched one of the YouTube videos that Formula One put out with the best driver radios, I think it was. Go find it on YouTube, I'd recommend it.
There you go, that's the plug. But Michael, obviously you said you kind of had limited time to watch. What would you, from your limited viewing, say was your moment of the year?
Well, I was kind of hoping Lewis would win the world title, because I thought his drive in... Oh, and I can't remember which one it was, where he drove from the back of the grid. So it was one of the last few races, wasn't it? Was it Brazil. USA? Brazil. Was just remarkable. And it had the potential to be a proper narrative changer, I thought. I thought that was just a remarkable piece of work on a Grand Prix afternoon. So maybe that's more of a race than a moment, but that was grand for me. But I mean, without being wishing to be obvious, I mean, I don't really know how you look beyond the last lap of the last race, to be honest, because I think we'll all enjoy watching that when we're all about 80 to 100. I think just an incredible moment.
We'll still be sat here talking about it week in, week out, I'm sure.
What were they doing? Oh my god! No, Michael, no. But by the way, you may well have touched this, but Sky ran literally just the last lap, but it didn't show any of the racing. It just showed Toto Wolff in the garage. It was amazing. It was just basically, so it was obviously about a minute and a bit, and there was just this silence, and then there was just him walking over to the mic and saying, "No, Michael, no, and this is so wrong," and that was it. It was just captivating garage camera. Yeah, anyway, carry on.
No, you know what? You actually bring me on to some moment. I was going to say Brazil, but what it was probably the moment from Brazil wasn't on track. It was Toto Wolff off track when he was on the headphones and he just kind of screamed and pointed at the camera, which was obviously looking at him. And he was just like ridiculously happy, but also angry about the whole weekend and everything that had gone on. And watching his guy come charging through the field, overtake everyone, and it was just like, yes, that's what we do. And I mean, seeing a team boss that passionate about things is never a bad thing, I think.
That's also produced many a meme that I've seen fly around on F1 Twitter for the last few weeks as well, which at the best of times is a cesspit.
Oh, so you got to love it. Steve, moment for you, what would you say your moment of the year was?
Sorry, I was just unmuting myself.
Nice, that's
all
good.
To be fair, I would have said Silverstone, really. Kind of a crowning moment for the season for me, really. I suppose that, and really the final race of the season, but in a more controversial way.
Yeah, totally fair. Some cracking moments, especially Silverstone. That was another great race. Even for different reasons, just seeing Ferrari up there. So nice, like it. Callum, anything from you? Moment of the year?
I think probably everything has been just about covered. I can't really think off the top of my head. Apart from maybe McLaren winning the first Grand Prix in 9 years. And it being Ricciardo, the guy that's had difficulties all season, and, you know, being the likeable, marketable kind of guy and all the rest of it. So that's probably about it, really.
No, that's good stuff. Ped, did you say? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. I said Hamilton on the P1 with everyone else in the...
Oh, yeah. That was it. You were first. Sorry. Adam, we'll go to you. Your moment of the year.
Yeah, I think it may have to be Hamilton locking up and going straight on in Baku at the restart. Just because it came after so much crazy stuff happening, and you know, Max was obviously had his shunt tire blowout by then, and just in the context and the drama of the race, I thought that was, yeah, pretty, pretty spectacular moment.
No, that was good, and you know what, that just reminded me of Mark Webber's scream.
Yeah.
That was something that will have also lived long in the memory, I think. Great stuff. I like it. I think that is the awards wrapped up then, which is good. So things to add for the season. Now, I mean, one thing, I've just refreshed Sky Sports F1, and there's just an article that's been released now, and it says the FIA has said it will conduct an analysis and clarification exercise into the controversial events at the end of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So whether that's down to Mercedes' appeal or whether that's just something they're going to do anyway, listening to the public, who knows, but that's a good thing. Analysis and clarification, I think that's definitely important. But yeah, anything else anyone would like to add in regards to the 2021 season? Silence.
I hope I see more of the next one. Okay. But my little boy, well, my eldest boy now, because I have two, Archie, was. Really, really looking forward to Max Verstappen winning the world championship on Sunday. He was going around the whole race. He loved the idea of what was about to happen, and he was proper excited that Max won it. I don't know why he's his favourite racer, but he is his favourite driver. Which, you know, I didn't give him too much stick for, because, you know, he's five. But we were at odds for a little bit. But yeah, I suppose. Just as a personal note, I hope I get to watch more of next season, and I hope my little boy is just as enthusiastic about it, because, you know, next generation and all that.
Yeah, definitely. It's always good when you have your kids watching. I mean, I remember trying to get my niece to watch when she was young. She could not care less. But she loved toy cars, which was a disappointment. Didn't like to watch them on TV, but, you know, one of those things. The one positive I will say from actually this. The weekend for the Abu Dhabi race, I had my parents over and my sister came over as well, and my sister refuses to watch Formula One, but we had it on. She was quiet when I asked her to be quiet so I could listen and watch, and when it got to the last lap, even she was shouting and cheering along with the rest of us. So it ended up being quite a loud house at that point, but. But yeah, what a great way to, you know, even people who weren't even into Formula One necessarily still enjoyed it. So great to see. All right. Well, I think, you know what, unless anyone else has anything to add from the 2021 season, I think that wraps it up. So, Michael, as you're here, I'm gonna let you see us out, you know?
Oh, wow. Have you still got a script?
Don't just sort of go, thanks. Memory. Do it from memory, Mike. No,
I'm going to start. I'm going to start. I've probably still got the document somewhere, which has probably changed. You know, might take a while. And the only thing I've got sort of seared in my head is my sign off for the Norwich City podcasts and all that. Look what I found. Here you go. NRF1 2019 script pad. So I see what the final sign off was. Let's have a look. This will be exciting.
Whilst we wait, we can always put Jake Comfrey in the little sting in here.
Have you still got that? Yeah, that's good. That's
still
probably,
goes in every week.
I'm surprised he doesn't charge us for that now. I started doing a Hall of Fame, didn't I, for the NRF one. There were two episodes. I don't think they've ever been aired. So at some point, we'll have to air them. I did one with Clive Chapman and one with Jake Comfrey. Aww.
I think the Jake one was aired, wasn't it?
Did we air the Jake one?
Yeah, it was titled something along the lines of Fixing F1 by shouting in Jake Humphrey's kitchen.
Jake's
or something
kitchen.
Like that.
It was definitely to do with Jake's kitchen.
Yeah, it was in Jake's kitchen. What a moment. Where does this go now, Rich? Is it just the one episode that goes out?
I usually still do two. This will be a big bumper one.
Okay.
Usually, when we can, we still do the two, but because they've had like so many back-to-back race weekends, there's been a lot which have been just one. So.
Well, I tell you what I've got here is, and we're done. There is nothing of there is nothing left to preview. Apparently, nothing left to predict. Well, that's because all the racing's happened. Just a cursory glance at the end of season test around Abu Dhabi. So that's still true, yeah. And then the cold winter begins. But we will return. Well, next year. For our 2019 season review podcast. Well, that's not right, because that was this. Keep an eye out for that one. Your 2022 season preview, let's call it that, next season. So I hope you've enjoyed all our wrapping up of the F1 thoughts this year. All that is left is for everyone to say goodbye. So do you want to just say your name and goodbye?
Sure, Steve. We'll start with Steve.
Yep, thanks as always, and look forward to getting more involved next year.
Good stuff. And next up we have our own Dan Springle.
Yep, hello, thank you to everyone for listening this year, and make sure you tune in again for I would imagine our Bahrain Grand Prix preview next season. So the winter will be long, but hopefully not too long.
Good stuff. And then,
I mean, even in the meantime, if you're really desperate for some racing, you'll have to watch Formula E. Which the Riyadh E-Prix is on the 29th of January, if anyone's interested, so make sure you tune in. That can be on Channel 4, I believe, if I remember rightly. So there you go, that's a plug, and I'm not ashamed of that.
we'll allow it for your great work all season, I think. and Callum up next as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And only, 94 days until FP1 in Bahrain. So, yeah, we'll look forward to that.
Wow, that's really not far away at all. Good stuff. And Ped as well, as always.
Bring on the big tyres. That's what I'm here for. It's been great. It's been great fun. Thanks for having me when I periodically do drop in. Rich, I will speak for all of us, and I'm sure Mike will agree. You've done a fantastic job this year, hosting often at short notice. And we have to also give a huge shout out to Katie Sandals, who isn't on with us, but also does a fantastic job hosting and stepping in. So between us, we muddle through, Mike, which I'm sure you'll be thrilled to hear. But yeah, great work by you, Rich, and thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next year.
Well, thank you. But yeah, I'm not the only one who hosts, so thanks to you all. And Adam, your debut, how was it? You enjoy yourself?
Yeah, very much so. Thank you very much for letting me make my debut halfway through the season closing episode. I'm sure that's the best way to do it. Really looking forward to getting more involved next season.
Grand stuff. We'll definitely have you back. It's been good. It's been enjoyable. And there's plenty of others. I know Kyle Cumbers, who's often on here, he couldn't make it tonight. Obviously, Alex had a few tech issues as well. And there was Phil and DT. Neither of them could make it either, unfortunately. But thank you to all of you guys as well, because obviously without you guys here talking with me, it would be incredibly boring. And thank you to everyone who listens as well. It really means a lot, and it's great to have Michael back on here as well. And yeah, it's great. But I think that wraps everything up nicely. So happy Christmas, everyone. Happy New Year. Enjoy a festive drink and festive food on us. We're not paying, just you buy it yourselves and eat it and think of us while you do so. But yeah, thanks everyone, and thank you from me. Thanks from everyone. Goodbye from me, and goodbye from everyone else.
Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye.